Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, let's go. You're rolling with Jason and John, 929 FM ESPN on your hump day of the week. July 9th, we're moving on. And so are the Grizzlies from the Utah Summer League. That's done. Took that L. Didn't really put anybody out there like we talked about. Played the backups to the backups. And so we didn't expect to win. Came within a point again. Lose. Now we can dive right on in. Talk about Jemai Meshack. How he continues to impress in some areas, and then in some other areas concern us? Man can't stop fouling. Did hit some threes. But we're not going to do all that. John and I are moving on to Vegas. We're looking at the big picture.
That's right. We got Cooper Flagg coming soon.
That's right.
I'm more outside of the Grizzlies scope. I'm looking more towards the bigger league picture. Because now the... You know, we saw a little bit, you know, Ace Bailey, VJ Edgecombe for a game.
Yeah.
But the main event is tomorrow.
The great White Hope.
I believe it's tomorrow too, right?
What color is he, BC? Is it tomorrow?
I think so.
What color is he, BC? BC, what color is he?
We're working on
it. We need you. We need you. BC, what color is he before we move forward?
7 o'clock tomorrow, by the way. There we go. 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Gabe will not be preempted, for that, even though maybe he should be.
Man, good looking out. I didn't realize that that's 7 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, all the games tomorrow, right? Like, you got Cooper Flagg in action tomorrow. You've got, trying to think, like, who else might play.
I knew the real show started on Friday, the Memphis Grizzlies against the Celtics.
Right.
I was tuned in for the show, the big three.
VJ Edgecombe tomorrow probably for the 76ers.
He'll be back.
And Jeremiah Fears for the Pelicans, so those are the big draft picks in action tomorrow night for the first night of Summer League officially.
At some point, they're going to run into the new big three.
That's right.
What they've been called.
Yes, the summer big three, at the very least. Maybe they'll be a regular season big three at this point.
Yeah, we sat the Summer League big three last night, and we should have. You and I said we should.
Yes.
So here we are.
That was a tragic basketball game. I mean, it was.
Unless you're a Jemai Meshack fan.
Yeah, that was brutal.
But you are.
I mean, I'm a fan of what he represents.
Come on, man. Come on.
But I, in terms of like,
expect you to have a take on whether now he's going to make this team, whether now he's going to get two way.
He'll get the two way.
All right.
But will he be a meaningful NBA player? Will he be a meaningful Grizzly? You know, I don't know.
Must hit the three to do it.
I don't know about all that, but for this format, I'm a fan. For the Summer League format, because I think what the Spurs showed you last night with David Jones Garcia, former Memphis Tiger.
They act like this man's unstoppable.
I mean, he really is out there doing he's doing work. They ended up losing the game with the buzzer, unfortunately. But they were winning for the majority of it as 6-point underdogs, 7-point underdogs, and it's because they care. I mean, so if you care more in this format, you will be successful. And I feel like Jemai Meshack is a guy that is going to care more than most other players in this format. So, got a chance, man. Got a chance to shine this week and this weekend in Las Vegas. But we'll get into all of that today here on the show. Jonah Dillon from the Commercial Appeal is going to join us at 11:25. We'll talk to him about Memphis football. He had a piece up about the Pac-12, which is obviously going to have its first season coming up. Is it this year?
A year away from now.
A year away
comparing
from
now, right. To what it'll look like in 26.
But they've got their... You know,
oh yeah,
they've got their eight.
They should be ready to rock.
Their Texas State eight. So we'll talk to them about the differences there. You know, Memphis is obviously going to continue to try to have that last spot. Like, is it a deal where, no, if you win the AAC, you get it? I mean, probably not.
Well, with Boise State going into the Pac-12,
right.
that's the key now. And they're gonna, you know, they're going to call it the Pac-12, even though what is the eight in football, whatever it is. With Boise State going in, the team you figure you're competing with when it's now, right now, is their Mountain West team.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right there at the top, that's one. But he had some interesting numbers about how that top eight compares to your top eight. Because if you look at the bottom of the AAC, it's pulling you down. We'll talk about it. It's a 26 comparison. Here's the other thing Jonah Dillon's going to square for us. How many years Ryan Sufield got on his contract, you know?
I know he just got the automatic extension, right?
Key word, perpetuity, fool. If he gets those 9 wins regular season, it's basically you can keep adding on that year into perpetuity. You know what perpetuity means?
Endless.
Man could be the coach forever, Brad.
All you gotta do is win 9 games?
So
every year he wins 9, he gets an extra year.
Every year 9 regular season wins, he gets the extra year.
At the end of the contract.
Yes. He adds a year. So it never ends, plus a $100,000 raise.
So, okay.
In addition to anything else they want to give him. But that's Laird Beach to you.
So
you got it? So it's basically 5 years left because he added a year.
But it could be 6 years left after this year.
Oh, no. It'll keep being 5, technically. You see what I'm saying? Because you burn one.
It never ends.
Yeah, you burn the first one. Okay. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Right. But
it'll always be 5 years.
If he wins 9 games for 9 straight years.
And what did you say the number was yesterday?
8.5. Right? So if he wins 9 games, he'd be $900,000 more a year after that 9th year. And he could do that every year and just get the $100,000 every year. And I know that we have had issues with tariffs and inflation and things of that nature. But I think $100,000 is beating inflation a year. Be my guess.
We're going to make sure we have the details correct with Jonah.
I would ask.
It's a great deal.
It's a great deal for Ryan Silverfield.
It's
a terrible deal for the University of Memphis.
Except for if you bought him out. If you fired him, you pay 60% of the money. It's not a full. We talked about that when he did. It was the only sort of saving grace.
Right.
It was the same thing before the extension.
Right.
It was on his previous contract. Memphis kept that. It protected itself a little bit in that you wouldn't have to pay.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, if you keep adding years, right? I mean, that's the thing about it is there's it never goes off. He's got 5 right now because he won 9 games last year. 1 didn't come off because you added 1.
Does that count bowl games, by the way?
It's 9 regular season wins. Okay. That's in the contract.
Well, that's good.
We'll make sure with Jonah, but yes.
That's good. So, you know, a little bit tough. We got to go 9-3. Not easy.
In this league?
I mean, it's not hard.
I guess if you're not playing the top teams all the time, then maybe it's not.
Right.
But if you've got some of those bottom feeders in there,
right,
and Memphis certainly has the advantage this year, like talk about the tougher games are at Simmons Bank.
Yes.
Is it a 9-1 season? We can discuss later.
We'll get into all that with Jonah Dillon at 11:25. In just a minute, we'll do cap or no cap. At 1:25, Norton Hurd IV is going to join us.
Yep.
Now, he's got a big week coming up.
Yeah, I think it starts with them tomorrow, I'm pretty sure, Peach Jam.
Peach Jam starts tomorrow.
Now, it's different now, John, than when we used to go because they play the last of the pool play games there. When you and I used to go, the top ones, that was where you advanced to.
Right.
Now, they weed out the rest of them with a final, 4 pool play games. Then you go into Peach. So you're there for like 2 weeks, bro. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Good grief.
Yeah.
It used to just be that one.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Everybody advanced from the sessions there to a final. What, top 24 team?
Yeah, to qualify for the.
Yeah. So you're still
you cut qualifying.
Off 8 or 12 or whatever it was. Exactly. You're still qualifying there. Hurd and those guys are what, top 2, top 3 in their in their group. So they should be fine unless it just came apart this week. But point being, he's got pool play games before.
Yeah.
He's got Peach Jam games, even though it's all Peach Jam.
And this year, like
North Augusta, South Carolina.
Who were his like best guys off the top of your head? You know. I know he had Jasper last year.
The kid LJ we talked about, I told you I went and watched him. I don't know what he looked like that next session, but remember he was a rising sophomore, I want to say. Like he was a year behind everybody. Is it LJ Smith?
Yeah, that's it. Yep, because it's your name.
He didn't play great. He played immediately, but he didn't play great. He's nationally ranked in his class, one of the top guys. But he's a year behind his older guys. Their center, I can't think of his name, he wears goggles, dude. He is a beast when he wants to be.
Yeah.
I think he's raised his profile up.
You got Terrace Bowie.
Dude, it's hard, man, because most of those guys this year are out-of-town guys. So for a guy like me, it ain't like it used to be where I could just rattle off all the guys from Memphis high schools. Now, it's going to come back to that, it feels like, with Braylon and these guys coming up. We've talked about it being cyclical. then maybe, you know, this thing will be Memphis-centric here in a minute. But,
yeah,
right now he's still got a bunch of national guys.
Yeah, I'm looking at the staff right now. I don't see our man Leon Taylor, so I don't know.
Oh, dude, he'll be there for the big one, I'm sure. But I think he's still on staff.
But, you know, he needs to get on the official site. I see Lonnie Gibbs. I see Norton Hurd. I see Ronald Brown.
They have a Ronald Tank Brown to you. Make put your Riley Egypt standout used to dunk home folks over there.
I see Usman Sarwar.
Sarwar.
Otherwise known as Tony.
Yeah. He is their strength and conditioning coach.
That's right. But
once had to carry Chris off the court after spraining an ankle.
Darian Gray.
Great dude.
Josh Whedon. But I don't see Leon Taylor. Let's get him. And let's just stop hiding it. And let's get it official. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows. Everybody in the city knows Leon's on staff. We just got to get it on. We just got to get it on official.
They have a deep staff. I guarantee you'll have a Team Thad shirt on.
That's right. Well, obviously, it's a teammate here on our station that we're rooting for in Norton Hurd the fourth this week, and they're going with some talent. There's no question about it.
Got it. We're coming in under the radar. I'll leave it at that.
Yep.
That might be better for us this year.
A Memphis team has never won the Peach Jam.
Is this a Memphis team?
Well, it's a Memphis-based team.
You see what
it's
I'm saying?
Memphis-based team. I see what you mean.
Of course. I mean,
no
it's Thaddeus Young that would be there to pat these guys on the back, and he's from Memphis and everything else.
There's a hard way
But you
on
see,
it.
My point, it wouldn't even be us anymore. I mean, back in the day, the Lawsons and us used to roll up there. Stokes, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Martavius
yes.
Newby, but you know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it ain't like that
no,
day
No, it's
back
definitely
then.
Not. It's
a little
definitely
different.
Not.
Cam Payne, Nick King up there, you know what I'm saying?
It'd be like, yeah, the Lawsons, and then you'd go get like a Kevon Allen or something.
Maybe Braylon Williams and those guys that are at Bartlett now will be the ones. They're in that team. But keeping them, I imagine, is going to be a deal.
See, every time I try to bring this up with Hurd, he bristles at it. He's like, no, we recruit Memphis.
Because Memphis tells him that everywhere he goes.
Well, I mean.
But he doesn't just hear it from us.
But is it true? Because it ain't no Memphis guys on this damn
team.
Like
I told you, what he'll tell you is it's cyclical, and maybe in a couple of years, that thing, for the 17s, he'll have mostly Memphis guys.
It's the way of the world. I don't hold against that, Hurd. I mean, he was a visionary.
You tell me. Like, do we produce like we used to?
We don't. We clearly don't.
I mean, we were just talking about this as it related to pros, but we can talk about D1s and everything else.
Yeah. No,
we're just talking about this compared to baseball.
Exactly.
You know, the other day.
Exactly.
Yeah, separate conversation. We'll do it one day.
Yeah, we'll do it with Hurd at 1:25. But we got a few things that we need to touch on. Let's do a little thing that we call cap or no cap. All right, there is no reason to have a quarterback competition at the University of Memphis, Jason. Is that cap or no cap?
That would be...
I guess I probably framed that in weirdly, more like there's no reason to wait on naming a starter.
That's no cap, because Brendan Lewis is your starter. And as Jonah Dillon over from the Commercial Appeal points out, we'll have him on 11:25, talk a little Memphis Tiger football. But Brendan's got 35 starts between Colorado and Nevada. Everybody else in the room, and Cramsey, the offensive coordinator, Tim Cramsey, was at the last night. He was on the Tigers on tour stop over Brookhaven. So he spoke to this, said they're going to name a starter, you know, a couple of weeks before the year starts, but, you know, and they'll have him in place. But it's Arrington Maiden, A.J. Hill, obviously, the four-star prospect, A.J. Hill, and then Lewis. And those other guys have zero collegiate starts. So that would be my – I realize you've got a culture of you have to earn it. Right, mm-hmm. That's everybody. That's not unique to Memphis. That's everybody. You have to earn it. We'll go through the process.
Yep.
But there is no competition here because, John, the need to win now doesn't stop. Even though Memphis might be picked fourth or fifth, you and I are sitting up here saying that's not good enough. There's too much investment here to finish down there. My point, they got to win at 9-plus games. That's what you expect now of this program. So you got to play guys now. So you play the guy that's played. Lewis. Now, you tell everybody in the room he's earned it.
Yep.
But this is done right now because the rest of those guys, with all due respect, they don't have any experience whatsoever. You can't afford to pull another. And Seth Hennigan, remember, he got in there by injury that freshman year. It all worked out, and he started for 4 years. But you can't afford to just say, okay, Hill, you're a four-star coming here. We're starting your freshman off the bat. Man, you win 4 or 5 games. He struggles. You know, that can put you in a tough spot. So I say this really out of respect to the transfer that you got and the experience that he's got in Lewis. Brendan Lewis, he's your quarterback. There is no real competition here. We can wait till 2 weeks before the season. We can do it that way, camp, whatever it is. But that's your man right there. That's who will be under center when this thing starts off.
Yeah, I agree totally. I think there's some politics to it going on, right?
Because you recruited.
You recruited him, and you don't want him to leave. I don't even know if the portal window is open.
No, I'm glad you bring this up because it's important.
That's why you don't do it.
Everything it took to get this kid, you give him the charade
of believing that he can get the job, knowing that he will not get the job.
As big as he is, maybe I factor in some sets with him too, or you know, a couple of snaps for him, like a series or two here or there.
Yeah, like I mean, they even did that with Arrington Maiden last year a little bit, right? But, a little bit, not much. But I didn't remember
how much of that. You know.
I think they maybe tried one at least. They'll do more with AJ Hill, but. You know, the reality is that, you know, there's, and I said this in the spring, there's no way that Ryan Silverfield, who is perpetually sort of on the clock here, is going to turn to a freshman quarterback, a true freshman quarterback. He's just, that's not him. That's not him. You know, and I understand, like, when Justin Fuente did that with Paxton Lynch, it was a very, very different setting. Like there were no expectations for Memphis when that happened. You know what I'm saying? And there was still a big movement. Like, oh, Free Piano Man. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
There was still a big movement Take against that. And that was when, again, Memphis football had not had any kind of tradition of winning, an expectation of winning, and it was still a firestorm. So do we really think that Ryan Silverfield is going to turn with a guy that has 35 career starts? And Brendan Lewis, he's probably not as good a talent as AJ Hill.
We'll see.
You know?
I guess we're hoping he's not, right? That means we're hoping AJ Hill has a high ceiling.
Right.
That's what we're saying.
Right.
That.
Right. AJ Hill needs to be better than
Lewis is starting games. I mean, it means somebody likes you.
That's what Silverfield just wants somebody in there who he can trust and who's going to run the offense. That's it.
You have to have him.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
I don't think you can.
That's what Seth was. I mean, now Seth had, you know, he had some big throws and some big. But I mean, when you think about what Seth Tennigan really was, it was a guy that was reliable, that didn't turn the ball over, and that could move the chains.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what he was.
But it was Silverfield that went to him, that you had to go to him that year out of injury, right?
Yeah.
And that would be the way I would go to AJ Hill.
Exactly.
You know, or. If he's not ready whatsoever, hey, he's not grasping the offense like we need Arrington Maiden in that case. But the point being, that's the only way I'm moving off is if I have a similar situation to what Silverfield would have had, what was that, 4 years ago when, you know, Seth Hennigan gets in there as a freshman off injury and then keeps it for the rest of the way.
Exactly. So, look, it is an absolute certainty that the starting quarterback will be Brendan Lewis. It was probably always designed to be that way. That's why they brought him in here.
We said even with AJ, you and I agreed, you had to go get somebody that's played some games.
Yes. Yeah. AJ is that sort of shiny break glass. If Brennan ever struggles or whatever, and then you can – or if for whatever reason the season is lost and you just need to get a guy some reps.
Or if you're blowing dudes out.
Yeah.
If you're blowing some teams out.
Let's hope that's the case. You'll have some chances in those first three games. What, Chattanooga, Georgia State, Troy? I mean, you should have some opportunities there for A.J. Hill to get some run.
And every rep counts because it's like you said, you're in the business as soon as the season starts of trying to retain him.
Exactly.
So you need him out there. You need him believing he's a big part of this.
That's what our guy, what's his name? The Arizona State coach, Kenny Dillingham.
He's on this morning, I think.
He said there's no recruiting anymore. It's retaining. Mm-hmm. He said recruiting is dead.
Uh-huh.
That's the way he put it. It's retention.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're talking about. And like, hey, it's a balance, right? Because you don't want to show too much of AJ Hill to where like everybody in the whole world wants him, you know, like, oh, man, but you want to give him enough of a reason to stay.
Got to feel like he's part of it and going to get it. He's the future.
I think it's going to be tough.
While you're playing Lewis and trying to win games.
Exactly. It's going to be a very difficult tango, because how do you balance both of those things? You know, I want to win games. I want to hide AJ a little bit, but I also want to use him and bring him back the next year as my starter.
You talking about hiding him? I think you're already preparing, though, aren't you? I mean, you're preparing money now. You're preparing because you know it's only going to go up. And you're right. I mean, the more you show of him, the more it could. You're maybe taking it out of your hands with an offer that could come for him.
Right.
But I don't know that you can be scared of it, because if he gets any – here's why I say that. If he picks up any kind of vibe that you're trying to limit him, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're limiting his look so he can't blow up. That's a ticket right on out of here.
It's true.
Utah, you're right. It's a balancing act.
Yeah.
And you know, Ryan Silverfield, That's why you get the big bucks.
That is why you get the big bucks. And it's why, you know, hey, the team gets big bucks, right? They have a good NIL budget.
2.25, I believe it is this year. Now,
is there NIL?
No, his money. Ryan.
That's
Ryan's salary.
Okay. What's AJ Hill's salary? I think he's making $1 million, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to go. It probably goes up per year.
Yeah. So,
it's just expected to, wouldn't you think?
I mean, he's basically making
retain him like we talked
NFL
about.
Backup money. NFL backup quarterback money at $1 million per. There are definitely NFL backup quarterbacks that are making probably just over that.
He makes the same thing at Cramsey. He looks at Cramsey, says, me and you make the same thing. What kind of car are you buying? I'll buy one.
That's right.
Well, I mean, that's crazy, right?
It is a new world. I mean, he definitely
Cramsey's
makes,
making $1 million over 2 years. I think
how
the
about
second
this?
Year
he makes
deal.
More than the starting quarterback. I mean, that's a very odd dynamic.
We've been doing that for a minute.
Yeah. I mean, it is part of it. And I don't know where I heard the – maybe I shouldn't have said that out loud. But yeah, I mean, it costs money to get him here. There's no question about that. So,
he's a four-star. He's the highest. Isn't he the highest one we've ever gotten out of high school? We said that?
Yes. So anyway, it's going to be a fascinating – even though it will be Brandon Lewis, the process to sort of get there – and the process after that happens will be very fascinating.
You and I are putting in some wildcat or something for AJ because you got to keep him.
Yep.
That's the main. I think that's kind of where we've figured out here is you got to find a balance and keep him engaged and out there. Maybe it's early in those.
And Arrington Maiden had the spring game. I mean,
who am I trying to keep? Because in the end, it's going to be about two guys.
Yeah.
With all due respect.
Yeah. No, I mean,
how much are you paying Arrington Maiden? I mean, doesn't that tell the tale right there in terms of who your investment's got to be in? But you're right. I mean, this is a kid who showed and probably is telling everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, they think it's going to go this way. I'm going to make it go this way. But what can you do? You're trying to, if it's a matter of picking one you're trying to retain or picking a priority between the two, which you have to do these days, you're picking AJ.
Yeah, Arrington Maiden had 253 yards and two touchdowns at the spring game. So, you know, it's none of it's easy. But yeah, Memphis is going to have to make a decision here, and it seems like it will be Brandon Lewis. All right, GG Jackson gets it. Is that cap or no cap?
It's hard to say this after two summer league games in Salt Lake City. He didn't play last night, but I would point to a piece from Drew Hill, who we'll have on tomorrow in his usual Thursday slide over the Daily Memphis. He talked to Gigi out there, and Gigi opened up about last year not playing, feeling like he deserved more, just like we thought. And he had previously touched on these things, but opened up in a way with Drew, obviously, that's real honest, real. And you're hoping it's not just player speak. And we talk about what coach speak is, the stuff that you know you got to say. I mean, John, we've done this with John, up and down the roster, John Morant, you know, down to Gigi Jackson. The things that you know you have to say because you're coming into a new year, it's fresh, and you haven't started the season yet. You haven't, frankly, the regular season and what you hope to happen. Well, we're not there yet, and so there's no letdown for you. There's been no opportunity for you to be disappointed yet, and you to show the immaturity like you did last season coming back from the injury. And so he admitted as much, talked about randomly, talking to Ty Jerome about it last year. Jason March also was a guy, former G League coach for the Grizz assistant last year, that was key for him in terms of bringing him out of this funk, he says, mentally. I felt it was my turn sort of funk. We've seen it before a million times. They've done movies and books about this stuff. Gigi's just 20 years old still. But the point is, you're in year three. You know, just like Bryce Sensabaugh, who I believe is only a year older, he's in year three, he's playing summer league. Nobody waits for you because you can put the ball in the hoop. And for the Grizzlies, it's a matter of Gigi needing to show he can do more than that. Number one, be a professional. But number two, use all that length or everything to do other things. Get downhill, to get to the bucket. Stop selling for threes. Defensively, use the body. Be more of a factor, which he was not last year. So it seems like from, you know, the open quotes, and I don't need to read them all out. I'd invite you again to go to read Drew's piece. That's what they do it for. So hopefully you go over there and click on the link and read it. But yes, to me, it sounded real. Sounds like he gets it. Putting that into practice, going through a season where maybe the minutes aren't coming like they weren't last year, that's a whole nother thing. Executing that, what you're saying, walking it like you talk it. But yes, I think he gets it, and you're hoping that he's a impactful part of the rotation this year. He's got the tools to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little skittish on getting there already. you know, Gigi's always been pretty damn good at saying the right things. Not that he's not done the right things. It just last year was a step back for him, and I'm sure he would have his own version of why, you know, it went that way. But, you know, I'll just say I'm hopeful that he gets it. I don't know. I'm not in his head. I don't know. I haven't talked to him, but you know, it does seem like he at least grasps how to be a professional.
He's to that point. He said, I don't want to read the quotes here, but he says, I'm getting to my workouts and everything 30 minutes to an hour ahead of time now. I switched up my morning routine. So it's not just him saying,
yep,
I know I need to be better on these things and deal with it better in terms of my mental space.
Yep.
It's I've changed my routine.
He's doing it.
I'm trying to be a pro here. Yeah. He continued to talk about that. Again, I'd invite you to go read the piece
over
at DailyMemphian.com.
Drew Hill is flying back.
Excellent.
And he is in the at the gate with the Utah Jazz first rounders, who are flying commercially to Las Vegas.
Wow.
Yeah, he sent me a picture. It's Walter Clayton Jr. and Ace Bailey in commercial at the gate.
I guess Walter don't mind, but he was at the draft. I mean,
Ace is there, too. I mean, I know Ace minds. I mean, he didn't.
Ace is there, too.
Yeah, man. I guess could
they get on a plane with the top five guys
right,
and all go over there in style? Like
a little private?
A bunch of them, yeah, maybe.
I mean, I guess.
Maybe they're not close like that. We'll get down like
yeah,
that. He seemed close with he's close with Dylan. Obviously,
mm-hmm,
the Rutgers kid.
Yeah.
Those are the two were.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just not a fraternity in that way that the top guys would say, oh, no, we're going to Vegas and a PJ ourselves or
right,
something like that.
Yeah.
Seems like that's the way you would get down.
If you're earning money,
I can tell. You don't like this taking commercial.
Charter, at least.
These are smarter young men.
Well, the Jazz should charter the damn flight, man. You know,
well, you said they got the whole team, the regular, that's their usual team anyway.
Yeah, it's crazy that y'all are getting.
It's the team they're going to roll out in October.
Y'all are getting treated like bums over there. Unbelievable. Like, I mean, crazy. Might as well put them on a bus.
Well, who's their owner?
Who is the Jazz owner? It's a good question. I have no idea.
He's not fifth richest like we are.
Ryan Smith. He's also that benefactor over there. He's the big booster at BYU.
Okay, yeah. That's all of his money went to BYU. That's what it is.
Yeah, that $5 million went to that top guy. They just got a BYU.
A monster.
It wasn't just him. Remember, they had to pay 3.1 for Rob Wright.
Yeah.
They paid three for him.
Funneled it out of the Jazz.
5-7. That's
homie's,
exactly where it
homie's
went.
Worth $2.6 billion, though. Surely he could get the PJ rolling over to Vegas.
Yeah, maybe he's just out on the draft. Maybe
is that more? That's not more than our guy, though, right? I thought we're fifth richest in the NBA.
I think there's net value, and then there's what are you liquid?
I think,
I don't know what the liquidity is.
Good question. We need to find that out.
Yeah, I think our guy's got plenty of dough.
It seemed like we're cutting back, too. We got off that tax line, didn't we?
Everybody we getting off that tax line.
We had to pay Jaren. Got
to pay Jaren, but we got Bane out here to help do it. We're not paying three anymore, just like the rest of the league. Brad's right. It's not just us.
That was a retooling. That was a different way to win.
Remember how we said we would pay the tax?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember those days? Oh, we'll pay the tax if we get close.
Y'all just got caught up in the two-seat.
There you go. Now you feeling me.
Yeah. I'm following your vibes.
Y'all reset that thing on us, didn't you?
Let me trade your third best player.
Yeah.
Reset.
Yeah.
Reset button.
Sometimes you need to take a step back.
That's right.
Take a step forward while I break the tax.
That's right. But that never happened.
Never.
No, that's not going to happen.
No.
I mean, Pacers said the same thing, right? The Pacers, they're going to go into the luxury tax, and they did not do that.
I will say, I think some of these decisions are being made based on quasi-tank injury years. Indy, if you think about what the Celtics are doing, it's sort of this half-ass version of what will be for 1 year to get back to where you're going to get when your guys are healthy.
Yeah.
You know, Tatum, when you get Halliburton back, because you're basically, Halliburton's out for the full year.
Yeah, he's out for the full year. And breaking news, so is Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
They just don't want to say it.
No, he's out.
They're moving like he's out.
Yes, they are.
Josh Minot, you're starting five.
Wholesale.
They're like, look, if we win 20 games this year, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Facts.
Somebody, go get you a center.
Because I saw again Horford, the Warriors are banking on Warriors.
Yes.
Everybody says he's going to sign with the Warriors.
Well, like, bro. Y'all running out of damn.
It's going to be all right.
The folks rolling out of nursing home over there in Golden State, bro. Al Horford, Steph, and Jimmy Butler. What do y'all think that's about to be? Draymond Green? Y'all all 40. Like, that's crazy. No. Y'all too old, man. Y'all can't. I don't know what they're doing out there. Ain't nobody going to be playing on back-to-backs out there. They're going to be 41-41. No. Just get to the play-in and hope to turn it on. Anyway, we'll talk to Jonah Dillon, get his thoughts on this Memphis quarterback situation, the team. Conference discussion as always. Stick around. Jason and John, 92.9 FM.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
I'm ESPN.
Jonah Dillon is the Tigers football beat writer for the Commercial Appeal, but he covers it all over there for the CA. You can follow Jonah on X at the Jonah Dillon. Read him at commercialappeal.com. He joins us now. We're very thankful to have him. He always straightens me out on how many years Ryan Silverfield's got left on his contract. But this is not a year. Don't get me wrong. And Jonah, I didn't bring you here for that. Not trying to make you uncomfortable to start talking about hot seats. I mean, my gosh, look at Ryan Silverfield's success, particularly in the regular season the last couple of years. What you can help us with, and again, thanks for coming on, is what's going to happen at quarterback. John and I were just talking about it, and I know Tim Kramsey was out and about last night. Seems like you were able to be there and cover it. Do we really have a sort of a quarterback battle, or are you expecting the guy, Brendan Lewis, who has a ton of experience, to be the starter day one when this all rolls out?
Yeah, Brendan Lewis, I think, look, it's not done yet. There's still a quarterback competition, but it's not an open competition, or it's not a, you know, let's go into the summer and see what we have. I think that's what the spring was for. And I think even going into the spring, I mean, I talked to Tim Kramsey before the spring started when he hadn't been able to see those guys, you know, on campus yet. Brendan Lewis comes in with this experience, 35 games as a starter, and now the rest of the quarterback room, four other quarterbacks, a total of zero pass attempts in college.
Yep.
So it's not even just experience. It's a huge, huge gap. And basically, as we've kind of progressed through the spring into the summer, it went from Brendan Lewis is the favorite to, at this point, I think I would be very surprised if Brendan Lewis was not the starting quarterback on August 30th against Chattanooga. I think that's just what we've been heading towards for a while. And you look at the things they're saying about the offense, because this offense is going to look a lot different because of his skill set. It's very different from Seth Hennigan's. And by the way, not the skill set that A.J. Hill has. So if they're going to build an offense around RPO game and quarterback run stuff, that kind of tells you where this is headed. And yeah, so I think Brendan Lewis is kind of the clear, clear favorite at this point.
So how much of it, Jonah, is just you're trying to sort of massage delicately this, you know, decorated, most highly ranked recruit that Memphis has ever had at the quarterback position? You know, is it just like trying to maneuver and keep everybody involved, you know, happy and engaged versus, you know, alienating with all this was already decided before I even showed up? How much of that is going into, you know, why we don't know officially who the starter is?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think that they did really want to give guys a chance to compete, and especially, like, they liked Brendan Lewis a lot. That's why they brought him in from Nevada, but they had never seen him play. They'd never seen him practice, you know, all the coaches in person. And so I think part of it was, let's make sure we know what we have before we feel confident about where this is going to head for next season. And I think they're still excited. Like, I've still heard good things from inside the program about the other guys who were in that competition, Arrington Maiden and A.J. Hill. I think with A.J. Hill, I know people are obviously really excited about him, and they were excited when he committed and when he signed. And I don't know that this, if he's not the starter, I don't know if that's a kind of damning thing about him. I think the big part of A.J. Hill when he came in was, like, this is a guy who's super talented, and the thing that stands out about him is his arm strength. And from what I've heard, they believe that he has all that arm strength, and they've seen him actually throw. But he is he's a raw player, right? He's a project-type quarterback, and he needs to develop. And if he had gone to Florida or any other power conference school, he would be developing, right? He wouldn't be even involved in a competition if he was at Florida right now, which was the other finalist for him when he was doing his recruiting. And so, and from what I've heard, he has that mentality of, like, yeah, I'm going to learn, I'm going to get better. And because we've seen this offense shift around year to year, I think there's every reason to believe that he could be the starter next year and that, you know, he could play this year. I just think they want to develop him, which again leads to another kind of weird conversation about, can you really develop players in college sports anymore? Because there's free agency every season, right? So you can spend all your time trying to develop a guy. There's no, like, guarantee anybody is going to be on the roster beyond this season.
You mentioned their games being different, and it stuck out. I wanted to go back to that. You know, but between Lewis and A.J. Hill, you mentioned Lewis more RPO game, you know, quarterback run stuff. Is it total night and day difference between those two? And then I have to ask you about Arrington Maiden. John brought up, I mean, he played well in the spring game. Sort of what does he bring to the table? But starting with the differences between those two, Lewis and A.J.
Yeah, it's almost Arrington Maiden is kind of in between, because Brendan Lewis, if they were standing next to each other, right, A.J. Hill is huge. He looks like, again, one of the reasons why he was so highly touted as a recruit. He's a pocket passer. He's got an extremely strong arm. That's the reason that he was a four-star recruit. That's the reason that all those schools were after him. Yep. Arrington Maiden is a little bit smaller, but he's still got a pretty strong arm, and he's bigger than Brendan Lewis. And I've heard good things about his ability to run and kind of scramble. He's one of those quarterbacks that can make something out of nothing. And then Brendan Lewis is a more traditional dual threat quarterback. He's going to run a lot. I think he rushed for something like 800 yards last year at Nevada. And so I think we're going to see design runs. We're going to see RPOs a lot. Yep. We're going to see getting the quarterback out on the move, which again is something, if you go watch, and obviously watching highlight tapes doesn't really tell you the whole story, but if you go watch A.J. Hill's highlight tape from high school, he's throwing the ball 60 yards down the field, but he's not moving out of the pocket to do it, right? That's just not his game. And so if you're going to design an offense around all those things, around getting the quarterback out on the edge and doing stuff like that, that kind of tells you who you think the quarterback is going to be. And so, yeah, they are pretty different. And I would say Arrington Maiden can do a lot of those things, but he's a little bit kind of in between both of those skill sets.
So when it comes to the, you know, and I'm sort of fast forwarding here, because I do think that the management of the A.J. Hill situation is going to be extremely fascinating. You know, what is the right answer there? Because if you don't name him the starter, is it a thing where, all right, we have to have something for him? And then if you do, what's the balance between having that and then, like, hey, we want to retain him, we don't want to show too much of him? Like, what do you think is the best way for Memphis football to ensure that A.J. Hill is playing here next season?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think part of it is, I think a lot of it depends on how well the team is doing, right? So, like, if they lose a couple games at the beginning of the season, I think you can see a situation where Ryan Soderfield says, let's throw this kid into the fire and see what we have. Because A, you can say, okay, well, we were developing this quarterback. We were thinking about next year. And so maybe we lost a couple games, but that was the reason. And then also you can tell AJ, look, we gave you a shot. We wanted to develop you because we feel like you're the future of this program, which they still feel like. I don't think that's ever changed. I just don't know how much, if the team is winning games, which is kind of what the expectation is, it gets towards the end of the season and it's like, what role could he possibly have? You know, significant role. And so I think that it ends up being behind the scenes stuff of trying to tell him, hey, look, like, we still feel very confident in you. Look, whatever pitch they had for him when he came here, it worked, right? And he's here, and it was a huge deal. And I know part of it was the opportunity to play early. But again, you go to a power conference school or something, you're not going to play right away as a true freshman unless you're like a DJ Lagway type player. And even that, he wasn't the starter right away. So I think the options for him, it would be interesting to see what the options would be for somebody who came to somewhere and didn't play, but obviously still has talent, what his options would be in the transfer portal. But you have to think about that for every player. But yeah, like you said, it is a big story. And I don't know. I think the answer is going to depend on how the team ends up doing on the field at the beginning of the season.
Would you expect, here's the other part of managing, you know, the sort of top two and the way we kind of think it's going to go. And maybe back in the day, you wouldn't have been as concerned about it. But it seems like in some of these situations, too, even after, you know, those early practices, you'll have that guy who didn't get the backup spot transfer out. And I just wonder, an Arrington Maiden might, if he's in that spot, you know, if a guy like that might say, hey, you know, I'm good enough to get an opportunity elsewhere. That's the other part of college athletics, is somebody else is always willing to offer that opportunity. And is that why you bring in after spring? You know, I know you had mentioned Jonah, and I hadn't read much about him, but there's an Arkansas State transfer that's in there. You said there's four guys in that room, and then Grant Troutman as well. Do you expect it to look that way when you start the season, or is that the reason you factor in so many guys? Because there's a good chance, you know, you still lose one of them.
Yeah, well, I think those two other guys they brought in, obviously they lost one during the spring, Harris Boyd, and then they brought in Grant Troutman and Ty Collins, like you said, from Arkansas State. Both of those guys, Troutman and Collins, are walk-ons, you might understand. Or I don't know that walk-ons even exist anymore in college sports, but essentially walk-ons. And are not involved in, you know, the competition or anything. They're both young guys also, so they want to develop, and who knows what's going to happen with them. I think once we get through the spring, like, I wouldn't expect anybody to leave. All those guys, if they would have left, I think it would have been during the spring, and okay, they all feel confident. And again, like, I think people believe that all three of those guys will be starters at some point, at some place in college football. Now, is that going to be at Memphis? I don't know. When is it going to be? I don't know. But, like, Arrington Maiden is somebody, I know he kind of gets lost in this because there's so much hype around AJ Hill, but, like, Arrington Maiden is someone who people still are very high on, both within and outside of the program, and I think will be a starter in college. And so it's a tough dynamic for Memphis to try to figure out how to please everybody, because obviously you can only play one quarterback.
Talking to Jonah Dillon, covers Memphis football for the Commercial Appeal, nice enough to join us. When you look out at the rest of the league, there's a lot of change, right? I mean, Army is losing its quarterback. Tulane is losing its quarterback. So Memphis, the good news for Memphis is that they are not alone, you know, in that distinction. Who do you think sort of shapes up as you know, the top of this league, you know, the top two or three? You know, who is Memphis going to have to go through?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like, because last year Memphis was kind of the clear favorite, and now it feels like there's, you can make a case for a couple of different teams. To me, I think Tulane is still probably there at the top because they brought back a lot of guys in the trenches, and they did pretty well in the transfer portal, and that's just a program that's been very consistent from year to year. I mean, last year, until the end of the season when they ran into Memphis, they were basically just destroying everybody. You know, they never had close call type games, and then they kind of just, the wheels fell off and they lost to Army. Navy, I think, is an interesting one. They brought back Blake Horvath, who realistically is, if you look at any rankings, is probably one of the best returning quarterbacks in the country, which obviously is, feels weird to say for a Navy quarterback, but we saw what he did to Memphis last year, so I'm sure Memphis fans will have no problem understanding that. And I think the fact they brought him back, that team has every reason to believe that, you know, you can believe that that team is going to be top of the conference. I think it's going to be interesting to see when they play Memphis at the end of the season, because you saw with Navy last year, Blake Horvath and a lot of their guys, they kind of broke down towards the end of the season because of the way they play offense, especially, like, if your quarterback is going to run the ball 20 times a game, he's not the same player in November as he was the first week of the season. And so Memphis gets to play Navy on Thanksgiving Day, which I think is actually a huge advantage. And then a couple other teams. I mean, I think South Florida had a really weird season last year because Byron Brown was injured and then ended up basically being out for the season, even though they never really said that he was. Going into last season, I mean, people were talking about him as he could be the best quarterback, the best player in the conference. He's got a pretty, like, he's a dynamic player, and we saw what he did a couple of years ago when they put up 50 points against Memphis here. And then I think UTSA, obviously Memphis fans know UTSA too, but they brought back their quarterback, and they figured it out kind of halfway through last season when they played that game against Memphis. And I think there's room for growth there. So I think all those teams, there's reason to believe that they could be at the top of the conference, obviously along with Memphis.
Can Memphis afford to have seasons where it's picked fourth or fifth and finishes down there when, you know, with what's in, and you know it well. I mean, you wrote the story. Memphis, you know, made $11 million from the AAC last year, most in the AAC. We know the level of investment. Dr. Scott's talked about that being right there at the top. So if Boise State and Tulane aren't having, it doesn't seem like it, but those years where, those down years, right, where they're picked fourth or fifth, right, shouldn't Memphis, it feels like, be holding itself to that same standard at this point and having covered this thing the way you have now and as thoroughly as you have?
Yeah, I think they should. I mean, I think Boise State has been picked to win the Mountain West preseason for like 10 years in a row or something. And so, you know, they don't always win it, obviously, but they have those, they're always up there. And I think Memphis should be, like, I just went through all those teams. I think Memphis has more talent than all those teams. And I don't know that you can even make the case for most of them. And the reason, obviously, we know, like you said, with the money, we know it's NIL. You know, ask Jeff Traylor about how much NIL money Memphis has. And so, like, that's the situation, is if you have the most talent in the conference every single year, which Memphis pretty much does. Now, obviously, talent doesn't win games, and there's a lot of reasons. If you bring back your quarterback, you got continuity, things like that. But Memphis, you should expect to be picked at least in the top couple teams every year. And you should expect to be competing at that level at the end of the season, right? We should be going into the last week of the season, most seasons probably, and saying, okay, Memphis is in the mix for the AAC title game. And I think it's fair to expect that because of the resources that this program has and the resources the rest of the programs in the conference have.
So, like, you know, and if that doesn't happen, right? And if you know, and again, you know, it's a little wonky because you're starting over at quarterback. But I mean, I guess I would just ask generally, how much more urgent does NIL, rep share, things like that, how much more urgent do you think those elements make a coaching decision? Like, do they intensify? You know, we used to have this time like, well, you would never do this until, you know, the third or fourth or fifth year. But does it accelerate the timeline on hard decisions when you have funding like that?
I think it does in some cases, but I think the other part is now if you're going to make a coaching change at any school for any program, like that's money that's coming out of the athletic department's budget, right? And now you have to be really tight with this budget because of revenue share. And so it was always in the past like, yeah, if we're going to spend money on a coach buyout or we're going to hire a new coach or do whatever, it's going to affect the budget. But now it's like that's potentially taking money out of the program and money that you could use to get better players. And so you have to think of that in the context of everything, right? The whole program and the whole athletic department and how it's going. But I think I think in a couple of years when we look back, we're going to see that, you know, the kind of gaps that are being created here between programs, especially like in the AAC, there's going to be pretty big gaps. Tulsa is not going to spend the same amount on football as Memphis is. And so within those gaps, you're going to say, okay, you should not be competitive with these teams. You should be beating them every year. It shouldn't be close. And you should be competing at the top of this conference. And so I think those things, once you see what the money is and what the disparity is going to make that type of conversation, okay, this is where we should compete. I think every school is going to have a better idea of where they should compete and how they should compete.
Talking, of course, with fantastic commercial appeal sports writer Jonah Dillon, covers the Tigers football as well as everything else for them. You had a piece up yesterday over commercialappeal.com comparing the AAC and the new Pac-12 once it's whole in 2026 and ready to get going. What did you sort of find in the exercise? I thought it was interesting, but didn't want to give it away. Were you surprised at the numbers you found in terms of comparing the strength of both? This is, again, assuming, as you wrote, that Memphis stays put in the AAC.
Yeah, I was a little surprised because two things. One, I think we all know when we think about it, but like the bottom of the AAC is really bad.
Yep.
And those teams are weighing it down, because when I did that kind of exercise where I just took the top eight teams from the AAC versus the top eight from the what's going to be the new Pac-12, it was a lot more comparable. And I think we have both sides of it, we kind of have an idea of, like, you hear it a lot, like, oh, the Pac-12, you know, these teams are, it's not comparable. And obviously for basketball, it's not, right? But for football, actually, it's not like these teams, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State, are like world beaters, right? Obviously, we know about Boise State, but it's not like there's a huge gap. And these teams at the top of the AAC are solid teams. Like, we just went through them. There's five or six teams that are like legitimate contenders for the AAC title this year and have like players that could play at power conference schools and stuff like that. I think the problem, and when you look at that and what I kind of found with that article, was like, if you're just playing these teams, you know, you look at your schedule and half the conference games are against these teams that are really bad and have, you know, no respect nationally, and they lose by 50 points in non-conference games, it's really tough for you to make that up, especially if those games are competitive.
So the other thing that's sort of all a part of this backdrop, and you had the reporting about the distributions and Memphis making more money than anybody in the group of however many we're calling it now. It doesn't even matter, right? But yeah. Memphis, as of, what was it, 2024? It was the 2024 fiscal year. They made the most money of anybody. Is that sustainable? Like, do you expect that to be the case every year, that Memphis, they stay in the AAC, even with all the things going on around them, they can still expect to be the top grosser in this group? Or do you think that those sands shift at all?
Yeah, I think the biggest question is how much money is the Pac-12 going to get from its TV deal? Because I think that's going to affect it. Those are the schools that could potentially like jump Memphis. We're not going to know for a couple of years, obviously. And it doesn't seem like that deal has even been 100% finalized. But those are the schools. I think within the AAC, the league has been, as you saw there, distributing revenue unevenly. So Memphis is getting more than everybody else. A lot of conferences basically just give the same amount of money to everybody. The AAC has been pretty particular about not doing that. Now, we don't know exactly what their structure is, but they're giving more to Memphis. And then obviously the other day with the announcement about the basketball game with Baylor and keeping all the revenue and stuff like that. So Memphis is going to, I feel confident, going to continue to be at the top of the conference in terms of distribution. The question is that number going to be higher than the Pac-12 number for the teams at the top of the Pac-12, especially if they're also distributing revenue unevenly? And so whoever it is, Washington State, Oregon State, Boise State at the top of the conference, that would be the question. And if Memphis is behind all those schools and those schools are making more money from their TV deal or whatever it is, then you have a different conversation about like, okay, you're not in this spot anymore. And now you have to kind of reassess, okay, where are we in the landscape of the Group of Five? Obviously Memphis wants to get to the power conference level, but if you're not at the top of the Group of Five level or the Group of Six level, it's going to be, then I think that that needs to lead to another conversation about how do we maximize our place in this current like ecosystem.
Tell me if I've got this right, and you know I'm always monitoring. I told John this before you came on. Silverfield, because you won the at least nine regular season games last year, we're essentially looking at he's still on a five-year deal, right? Because you re-upped it the 1 year. Is that the best way to look at it?
Yeah, basically. So if he wins nine games, you get an automatic one-year extension. Now, the other clause is for the 10 game. If he wins 10 games and has a appearance in the conference championship game, we get a two-year extension. You have to hit both of those things to get the two-year extension. And that would definitely happen one time. So the nine games is basically, if you win nine games every year, you're always on a five-year contract. That's basically how to think about it.
So we're basically all the way through 2029 now. And you just said something that maybe is critical, maybe that I need to start factoring in to whatever decisions you're making about Ryan Silverfield. And the key there is that we're talking about 5 years on this deal. So you know, you add all that up, 5 years, whatever, 12, 13 million. You know, if you take off one, maybe it's 10.6. We've talked about the contract being 60%. But if that is coming out of your athletic budget and rev share, like you talked about, you know, that maybe you have to live those things out in a way that you didn't, perhaps because now that money, I mean, I'm just looking, if it's all coming out of one pot because of rev share now, yeah, you have to be, this isn't a deal where, hey, we can pay, hey, it's 60%, so we'll cut it down and pay that $6-7 million on 10, whatever that's going to be. If it's all coming out of one pot, I mean, how would you sort of sum that up the way you know, Ed Scott's got to look at this and deal with this financially? We know he's a numbers guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you can still do the same thing of, you know, hey, I want to fire this coach for whatever reason, for whatever program, and I'm going to call a donor and say, hey, can we get this? You know, a lot of the coach fires, especially at big schools,
still
for football,
donors and taking care of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like look at Texas A&M. I mean, they couldn't have just fired Jimbo Fisher unless somebody said, I'll pay whatever $75 million or whatever it was. And that wasn't just the money from their usual budget. But at the same time, if you don't have that, and even if you do have that, if somebody says, hey, I want to give you this money to do that, well, like, if you're Ed Scott, you have to think, is this the best use of this money? Now, sometimes you can't convince people, hey, can you just give me the money to use it for this or that or for NIL or for a stadium or whatever? But I'm sure that's not, unless you decide that you want to fire a coach, I'm sure that you're not thinking, let me get money to do this. And I think, I don't know, I think you could see contracts being structured differently for coaches and tying them to revenue share, tying them to away from that, because like you said, these schools now at every level, and especially at Memphis, where we know money is going to be tight because they're not going to be at the right, at the cap, you have to just find every way possible to maximize the money that you have. And so anything even like that is just taking away from the resources, and that just leads to, again, more conversations about how to maximize that type of thing.
Yeah. Jonah, man, great stuff. Appreciate the
Brother,
time, as always.
Love having you on. Thank you, Jonah.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Great stuff.
Yep. He is Jonah Dillon, covers the Memphis football program for the Commercial Appeal. Appreciate him joining us on the show. We got Summer League rosters announced. We got Summer League basketball tomorrow.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.